Welcome to the MMQB podcast. I am Gary Gramling. I am here with Andy Benoit. And Andy, I'm going to do it. I'm finally going to ask Andrew Luck to pay back the $7 he borrowed from me.
Yeah, with interest, I would hope, at this point.
He can afford it.
He can absolutely afford it. And I don't think, Gary, we need to get into the Andrew Luck contract, because there's a simple solution to this whole discussion. And it's the same one for every new contract, especially quarterbacks. And that is, it's a function of the market value. That's what star quarterbacks cost. If Andrew Luck didn't get paid by the Colts, someone else in theory would pay him that. The franchise tag was going to give him close to the amount he got over the length of the contract anyway. And that's the end of it. This is all just economics in play. There's nothing more to read into these contracts.
Yeah. Andrew Brandt's heart is broken again, though, that franchise quarterback does not hit the open market. It would be fascinating to see what Andrew Luck would get out there if it was just an open bidding war with 32 teams.
Yeah, that's an interesting point. You could actually say it's an artificial open market then, because you're right, quarterbacks never reach out there, and so there hasn't been a major jump in their contract numbers yet.
Yep. Well, $87 million guaranteed for Andrew Luck. That was sort of the headliner for this week, at least the happy headliner. Rolando McClain will not get $87 million guaranteed next year. As a matter of fact, he is suspended for 10 games. Another Cowboys guy. I think the Cowboys have run out of defensive players. I think it's Sean Lee, Orlando Scandrick, and I don't know, Byron Jones. That's about it.
As the guys they have left, yes. Yeah. Everybody else has been suspended on that defense. It's what you get when you go for talented guys with issues. That's how these guys are available to Dallas. They like McClain in their nickel package because they think he's a good run-thumping presence in nickel, and you need that still, even though nickel's a passing down package. That's about the end of the story here. They'll survive with Anthony Hitchens in McClain's spot, but they are now very thin at linebacker, too.
Yeah. And Sheldon Richardson, a guy who we got some ire for leaving Sheldon Richardson off of our top 15 defensive linemen last week. Sheldon Richardson suspended for a game, personal conduct policy. Do the Jets, I mean, Wilkerson's still there, obviously. They have Leonard Williams. They lost Snacks Harrison. Are they going to be fine for the opener without Sheldon Richardson?
Who do they play in the opener?
That's actually a really good question. I'm going to look it up right now through the power of Ask Jeeves.
I can pull it up as well. They play the Bengals on September 11th on a Sunday.
That's an important game. I mean, that's a game that could have gone either or. They got the Bengals at home, so.
Yeah, the Jets they played without Richardson for a little bit last year, if I recall. They'll be fine. You can live a game without him. They're deep. The other guy, keep in mind, they added Jarvis Jenkins this past offseason. And for 20 or 25 snaps a game, Jenkins can be an effective player for him as a 3-4 defensive end. Obviously, you want Richardson back. We probably could have included him on our top 15 defensive linemen rankings. Mm-hmm. He's that kind of an explosive player. One game's not bad, given some of the stuff you've heard about this guy, too, though.
Yeah.
From the Jets' standpoint, I'm not trying to condone Richardson's immaturity, and I think that's what it is. At best, it's immaturity. One game's not the end of the world. This suspension's for the driving incident. Is that correct?
Yeah, right. Was that the last one he had?
He was going 100 and something miles an hour. There was a 12-year-old in the car, which doesn't make it any more illegal, as I understand. I could be wrong there.
It just underlines the stupidity of it. Yeah, 143 miles an hour and attempted to evade an officer who was pulling him over, which also, it's a bad idea.
Well, if you're going 143, isn't that, you almost like evade him by default, don't you?
Yeah.
Like, how do you not evade if you're going that? You can't just slow down and pull over at 143.
Perhaps that officer was Iron Man and just kept right up with him.
If we're talking on the topic of immature morons getting suspended, are we going to mention Manziel at all? I don't think it's. I'm surprised it's being treated as news that he got a 4-game suspension. I think anyone that can read anything between a line knows that Johnny Manziel's never going to play in the NFL again.
I was going to say, it's almost just like going through the, you know, the public at large and just handing out suspensions to just random people, like, you know, your grandmother is suspended for 3 games for something she did 10 years ago or something, but. Yeah, you know, for the record, Johnny Manziel slapped with a 4-game suspension. So, I don't know. I guess if there was some sort of a quarterback's club horrible bus crash, they all step into an open elevator shaft or something like that, and we just ran out of quarterbacks in this league, Manziel is out there.
I don't know,
so
even then, I don't know.
He's, oh, come on. You have to let him in. You know, Manziel is perfect for the CFL, and I hope that's his next step, because he actually, I think he'd be a good CFL quarterback if he wants to play football, which I don't know if he does. I think he might just be fine being a TMZ reality star, and that's the life he's going to lead.
Yep. All the best of luck to him.
Yep. And the last bit of news here before we jump into the main part of the show, Eugene Monroe, ex-Ravens offensive lineman. He's still out there, and it sounds like he's going to take his time selecting a new team. Probably fishing for more money. Also might just want to miss the first part of training camp because he's been in this league for a long time. But Monroe was let go by the Ravens, who drafted Ronnie Stanley. Couldn't stay on the field the last couple of years. So there's some logic behind it, but sort of the undercurrent of the story is that Eugene Monroe is very outspoken about the league giving a chance to cannabidiol, which is essentially weed. It's weed minus the THC, so you don't get high, but it serves as a pain reliever. Many of its advocates say it is safer than opioids. A lot of people around the league frown on it. And the Ravens maybe didn't care to have Eugene Monroe out there as the face of the legalized weed movement. Now, I wanted to ask you, Andy, is it fair to categorize it as that? Was Eugene Monroe good enough still that he shouldn't have been cut when he was cut last month?
No, I think I understood cutting Eugene Monroe. He has had the injury issues, as you said. He's been pretty average by quality left tackle standards, which is what you expect with a Eugene Monroe if you're going to have that guy on your payroll. He's been pretty average the last few years. Baltimore wanted some stability there. Does this help his case that he's outspoken on this social issue? It probably doesn't help his case. I don't think it's impacting it nearly as much. It's not like the last time I saw a guy appear to truly be blackballed for something other than obvious. Like Greg Hardy right now is being blackballed, and it's well-deserved, mm-hmm. and he's blackballed because he's not worth the trouble. Yep. So it's, you can argue it's maybe not even blackballing. It's just a guy doesn't have any value left because he's too much trouble.
Yeah,
blackballing, the last time I saw a guy who could really play and wasn't allowed to play because the league didn't want him in there anymore because of an issue outside of football was Kevin Mawai a few years ago, who headed the lockout. And he was not washed up. Mawai had 2 or 3 years left, or at least 1 or 2 good ones.
Yep.
The blackballing doesn't happen very often. That was an unusual circumstance. It's too much of a meritocracy in the NFL. You're too valuable if you can play at a high level. Monroe can play at an average level now, and someone will probably sign him around Labor Day and plug him in, and he'll play 1 or 2 more years, and then that'll be the end of his career. Yep. And it's been a nice, solid career.
It has. Well, that's actually going to bring us to the offensive lineman countdown. If you have not been around, we've been counting down the best players, top 15 at each position throughout the offseason. If you missed past shows, we've done almost everything except for quarterbacks and linebackers at this point, and edge rushers. If you want to listen to past shows, they're all on iTunes, SoundCloud, Stitcher. You can go find them. Today's offensive lineman, Eugene Monroe, was eligible, did not make the list. We do have 15 fine players to run through here. But before we jump into it, we're going to do the also receiving votes. Just a reminder, if you are listening for the first time during this series, AP poll style voting, Andy, myself, and Jeff Irwin, our researcher. That means if you get a first place vote, 15 points, get a last place vote, you get 1 point, and everything in between. Andy's vote counts double because Andy knows football that well. I'm going to run down real quick, Andy, the also receiving votes here because there are more than usual. Richie Incognito, Weston Richburg, TJ Lang, Donald Penn, Evan Mathis, Joe Staley, Alex Mack, Dwayne Brown, Mitchell Schwartz, and Jason Kelsey. Anyone there you want to highlight as deserving or undeserving?
Incognito to me is deserving.
Yeah.
And when we do these discussions we're about to do here, Gary, I'm going to talk in concepts a lot because offensive line play is so built on minutia and small attention to detail, which, by the way, that's why these guys have the higher Wunderlich scores always coming into the league. They're the smarter players. There's so many small details with it. It's not possible to track and understand and comprehend all those details at this kind of level where we can rank guys. We could do that if we were watching these guys in isolation, but we're not. We're watching the whole field, the whole all 22 players. So
yep.
I ranked my linemen more about types of linemen and what they do and the value they bring to their team. there might be guys, there might be 15 better players than Richie Incognito if we're to break down mechanics of offensive linemen and how you're supposed to play the position. What I know is Incognito plays on a gap scheme for the Bills, meaning they do a lot of pull blockers, man-to-man blocking concepts. He's the guy they put on the move all the time. He's the key to their run blocking designs because he's that guy who goes on the move. And there's a lot of value to that when you're a run, almost a run-only offense like Buffalo is.
Yeah.
So for that reason, I put Incognito on there because I think that's worthy of discussion. And I think he's I would be surprised if there are 15 other linemen more valuable to their team than Incognito is. I mean, he might not be a top 15 guy, but he's top 15 value in my mind.
That's fair enough. I kind of went the opposite way. I sort of took the tack that, you know what, your average tackle is asked to do more responsibilities as a pass protector, which is more important in today's game. A lot of guys who can play tackle. Well, let me put it this way. You're more likely to be able to convert from tackle to guard than from guard to tackle. Is that fair to say?
That is fair to say.
So I tended to penalize some of the interior linemen. I had a bunch high on my list, but that was actually one reason I took Incognito out. I'm not sure, but Incognito, over the course of his career, has been good, but he wasn't really great until last year. So I wasn't sure, you know, how much credit to give him with the,
right,
you know, one-year wonder potential in there. I don't think he's a one-year wonder, but maybe.
No, I know what you're saying. And it's unusual that a guy gets – and that goes back to the scheme with Buffalo. He's a great fit for what Buffalo does because guys in their 30s – I believe he's in his early 30s – who have been out of football for a year in his case, they don't typically have breakout seasons at that point in their lives. And Incognito had his best season as a pro last year. So clearly he's found a team that really fits his skill set well, and that's why he re-signed with them and why they wanted him back.
Yeah.
I get what you're saying, though. It's hard to know, are we ranking linemen in the aggregate of their careers or for the past 5 years, for the last 5 minutes, which is why Jason Kelce wouldn't be on the list because he was bad last year. And I don't know. We're just talking football. So send us your hate tweets, but understand that all this stuff is gray. This isn't a firm, here's the best 15 linemen, no questions asked type of thing. Unless it's from Jeff Irwin's list and he's got weird statistical majors backing up some of his ridiculous items, which I'm guessing he's the guy that put Evan Mathis in our list here.
He did. And I actually, sort of sticking to what we just discussed, I put Jason Kelce up there based on a bit of a lifetime achievement award type of deal.
Yeah.
I gave him a pass for last year. But let's jump into the list. And tied for 14th here with 10 points, we have Kyle Long and Jason Peters. I want to ask you about Long first. I left Long off the list. And again, relating to what I just said, I penalized Long for his struggles at right tackle last year, which is slightly unfair. He's obviously a much better fit at guard. Convince me otherwise, Andy.
Well, I just spent a few hours the other night reading my Bears film notes from 2015, actually.
Mm-hmm.
And what stood out, one of the things that stood out was Kyle Long was negatively impacted by a lack of talent at the guard position. Keep in mind, you're a part of a five-man unit when you're on an offensive line.
Yep.
And if your teammate messes up, you have to help that guy. You have to, especially if a guard messes up and gets penetration as a tackle, when you have an opportunity, you've got to come off your assignment and contribute. You can't just give a running start to a quarterback hit for the defender who got past your guard. Kyle Long, I think, dealt with that a lot last season. He's a better guard than right tackle. He'd never played the position until week one. At least not at the NFL level, hadn't even practiced it.
Yeah.
So he was in a tough spot already. Tells you what kind of athlete he is that they would even ask him to do that. He's back at guard now because they have Bobby Massey at right tackle. I think that's really going to help Chicago overall because they need Long's athleticism in the middle of their line. But I like Long. I thought he did much better overall than what he appeared to do on the surface last season with the Bears.
Yeah. So I am the only one who voted for Jason Peters. I gave him a very high vote. He was 6th on my list. And
wow.
I will admit that was very much a lifetime achievement award type of vote. I think he can still play if he's healthy. I think he will benefit from not being in that. I think Chip Kelly's system, his practice system, his tempo, I think it wore the linemen down. I think Peters especially was a victim of that. So I will be very curious to see what he gives them last year. I will admit he might just drop out of this list for me a year from now, but that's my defense of him. He was always one of my favorite players before before last year. I think the injuries piled up, and the what Chip Kelly was trying to do with his veteran lineman just didn't make sense for him.
I had trouble overcoming. I know what you're saying, and I don't disagree. And there have been times before where I have thought Jason Peters is washed up, he's done, and then he's come back and had tremendous seasons. He's at his best. He was as good of an athlete at his position as almost anyone in the league. A former tight end when he came into the NFL. So I know what you're saying. He's now in his mid-30s. I think he's 34 years old. Mm-hmm. He's had some serious injuries in addition to some nicks and knacks here and there. I had trouble getting that out of my mind, given that he also didn't play particularly well last season. So I guess I'm betting the under on Jason Peters now. I'm not optimistic.
Yeah, you are betting the under on Jason Peters.
But it's not ridiculous to have him in the discussion. And what you mentioned, Chip Kelly's scheme, and we might as well talk about that now, because I don't believe we're going to have any 49ers offensive linemen in here. Joe Staley did not make the list.
No, he was close.
He was in the rest of our receiving votes, guys, along with Jason Kelce. What makes that scheme unique for offensive linemen, as we're just learning football here, they do so many perimeter runs there under Chip Kelly, where they pull the guard and the center. And so you've got to have a guard and a center that can move laterally and get all the way outside the formation and towards the sidelines on a lot of their run designs. And that's why Kelce was so valuable when he was playing well for Chip Kelly, is because Kelsey's the nimblest guard, the nimblest center in the NFL. So just as we go back to looking at guys and what kind of scheme they play in and what they're asked to do, there's a learning point for Chip Kelly, and I think it's going to be a real problem in San Francisco this year, because they're still very much rebuilding the inside of their offensive line.
Yeah.
But that's an example of Kelly's scheme, and he's not going to change that scheme, which maybe he should given who he has right now. But that's another example of Kelly's scheme having very specific demands to the players. And then, like you said, the up-tempo, can that wear on an offensive lineman after a while? And I think a guy in his mid-30s who's had injuries, like Jason Peters, who was in and out of the lineup, so he probably wasn't always in the best of shape. That probably is a factor.
He is a guy. I'll be fascinated to watch what he does this year in a more traditional system. So, Long and Peters tie for 14th. Kelechi Osemele, 13th. He was 10th on your list. He was not on mine, but he was 18th, and Irwin didn't rank him. Newest Raider.
He is the newest Raider, and I would imagine the Raiders will – well, I was going to say I would imagine they would do some zone type of schemes with him, because that's where Osemele played in Baltimore, outside zone. So there's two types of zones. There's inside zone and outside zone, and it has nothing to do with where the ball's going. We're talking about the blocking techniques. Outside zone is what you think of when you think of zone. It's the Alex Gibbs, Denver Broncos. Everybody gets off the line in unison, and you stretch to the perimeter, and the running back finds a cutback lane and goes. Inside zone is what you do when you have linemen that can't do outside zone. It's big double teams at the point of attack, and you're just going north and south. So the guard in the center, double team, someone works off of that double team defensive lineman up to the linebacker. Mm-hmm. Minnesota did it a lot last year because their offensive line was particularly unathletic, but they were very big in physical size. So Osemele is built for outside zone, but he's strong enough to certainly be a very good inside zone player. And I'll be curious to see what they do there in Oakland in that regard, because I think Osemele and Rodney Hudson, their center, can be outside zone guys, but I don't think Gabe Jackson's necessarily that kind of blocker. I'm not sure Donald Penn is anymore either. So the Raiders have really good offensive linemen at every position, but the offensive linemen don't necessarily fit each other's skill set. They don't have the same type of good offensive linemen. And what will that mean for everybody? And if you're not all on the same page with an offensive line, you're going to be in trouble too. So this could be an up and down year for Osemele, just adjusting to the new team.
Okay. That's something to watch for.
But I'm the guy that put him on. I put him on my list. I think when he gets rolling, he's as good as any. He's a highlight reel blocker, and you don't see very many of those in football, of course.
Now, he was just outside mine, and he's a badass. And I think there's something to be said for that. He is a nasty guy who does some very cruel things on the field.
He also played well at left tackle, by the way, when they put him in there. He wasn't great, but they put him in an absolute bind at the end of the season, where everybody who ever played offensive line for the Ravens seemed to get injured at the same time. And he was all right for them there.
Yeah, when Jonathan Ogden couldn't show, they decided it was time to slide Osemele over there. But yeah, he didn't sink. He swam over there.
Yes, he did.
Osemele comes in 13th. In 12th, Marquise Pouncey. Now, I think the obvious knock on Pouncey is the fact that he missed all of last season and missed all, but he got injured in the opener in 2013. I'm going to put some blood in the water for you, though, Andy. A lot of the analytics sites have never been fans of Pouncey, whereas, you know, even early in his career, he was getting all-pro consideration and Pro Bowl nods. Analytics guys have not cared for him over the course of his career. I think the Steelers asked him to do a lot more than your typical center is asked to do, and I think that's where the value came in with him early in his career. You and I both had him ranked. Jeff did not. You had him 9. I had him 13. Tell me about Marquise Pouncey. Why should we believe in him?
I guess I fall into the masses that get enamored with the athleticism. He moves on the balls of his feet without giving up any power. And Pittsburgh does not play young centers. They have never done that, but they did with him because the football IQ is where they wanted it to be. Now, guys that have a problem with him analytically, I can't argue against that. I would love to hear their reasons. I really would, because they might have good reasons for that. Because one thing that does happen with offensive linemen a lot, we're all going to be guilty of it to some degree because of what I said up front. We just can't watch these linemen every single snap with the nuance that is demanded to truly understand them and rank them in a hard and fast way. Maybe the Pro Football Focus guys in theory can because that's what they're doing. But even then, we don't know what the linemen's assignments are every time. And so it's hard. Coaches have trouble critiquing linemen even. But with what I'm getting at is sometimes when we know who a lineman is, and the Pounceys came in because there were two of them. They were twins in Florida. Gary, they've been twins their whole life. Can you believe that? we knew the Pouncey's, though. We knew about them, and therefore we were more aware of them. And so they kind of become the celebrity offensive linemen, and they're going to get more votes just by default for that. Evan Mathis has turned into one of those guys, too, actually, because of the analytics guys. The analytics guys rated Evan Mathis. In fact, Neil Hornsby wrote about it on MMQB in his Dr. Z piece this week, that they're proud of the way they ranked Evan Mathis, and they're saying, and everybody said, you're crazy, he's just a guy, and they said, not by our metrics. Well, people latched onto that so much that Evan Mathis became very overrated in a hurry.
Yeah.
And that when he got a contract a few years ago that was something just kind of middling, it was like a good player but not great player type money. People didn't understand that, but football guys knew that he's an average guy. It's just a matter of once we learn a few linemen and we learn a specific thing or two about them, we tend to hold on to that because we don't know anything else about offensive linemen.
Yeah, yeah.
So Pouncey could be one of those guys, different than Evan Mathis, but same kind of thing.
So I started to like Marquise Pouncey first time I saw him at Florida because watching a Florida game when they just sort of flashed on the offensive line and you just saw him for a split second, he had M.A. Pouncey on the back of his jersey because obviously he played with his brother Mike. So he had M.A. Pouncey. And just at a glance, I thought it said M.R. Pouncey. And I just thought it was so awesome that someone had Mr. Pouncey on the back of his jersey. I also think he's really good, which is why I ranked him 13th.
I'll tell you what, he's going to be, if he is back to himself this year for the Steelers, he's going to be valuable because they do so many things with wide receiver screens and slot receiver screens where the ball is instantly to the outside.
Yep.
If you've got a mobile center that can get over there and create an extra blocking alley, run the alley as a blocker, take the angle out in space, that gives you a lot more dimension and you're a much more threatening screen team. And I think Pouncey, he certainly has that kind of movement ability to do that.
Absolutely. So Pouncey comes in at 12. We have a tie for 10. Pouncey's teammate, David DeCastro, and Teron Armstead from New Orleans. Armstead, another...
That's got to be a Jeff Irwin one.
I had him up there, too. I had him 9. Irwin had him 5. So there was a lot of... There was a very heavy Teron Armstead. Teron? I'm just going to say Teron because I started that way.
Yeah.
No, Taron.
That's what his parents did too, I think.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. They probably couldn't decide how to pronounce his name for his entire life. But Armstead comes in tied for 10 on our list. He's a pure athlete guy, and he's still, you know, I'm projecting him a little bit when I rank him 9 because he is going to get better. He was a small school guy. He came in, I feel like he was like 285 when they drafted him, and obviously he's had to add some weight. But I think he's good. I think he's going to stick on the left side there for a long time for New Orleans. Now, are you down on Armstead?
No, I'm not down on him. I'm not that high on him, but I do see the athleticism you see. So I get it. I understand it. I think Drew Brees, he can compensate for offensive tackles a little bit. Now, you could also argue that it's harder to play offensive tackle for Drew Brees because Brees is short, and so he needs to drop back a little bit deeper in order to see. And the deeper a QB drops, the harder it is for a tackle. But Brees has always been so good at pocket movement that he can hide a tackle's weaknesses a lot of the time. But Armstead doesn't have a ton of weakness. I'm okay with it. I'm just surprised he's that high.
Okay. Okay. And DeCastro is a guy that you had at 7. I had him down at 19, and Irwin didn't rank him. He came into his own the last, I feel like, year and a half. I started to notice him more.
Well, and the reason why, notice we're talking about run blocking, at least I am, a lot with these guys, because that's where it's easier to see who's good and bad, because you're exerting a skill as a run blocker versus as a pass blocker where you're reacting to something. And it's you're trying to make something not happen in pass protection, and as a run blocker, you're trying to make something to happen. And it's easier to see something happening. DeCastro makes a lot happen in the ground game. So we talked about inside zone with double teams up to the linebackers. The Steelers do that a lot. But then what they do, as well as any team in the league, is they'll go for little stretches in a game, and you don't know when it's coming. It tends to come in around third, fourth quarter, like when they need it, meaningful drives, where they will go with gap scheme runs, and they'll run power, or the one they really like is counter, which is power but to the weak side. And so when you have counter, you have a pull blocker, again, a pulling guard, and DeCastro's the guy for them, and he's been absolutely dominant in that role. And the game that really comes to mind is the Bengals game, the one in Cincinnati last season, where Pittsburgh, I believe it was last season, may have been the year before, where Pittsburgh got rolling on him and just ran the same counter play again and again and again and gashed him. Yep. And DeCastro stood out to me more than Le'Veon Bell did in that sequence.
Yeah.
How many of these guys, Gary, have had slow starts to their career? Because DeCastro didn't play at first. He was injured. Armstead, I don't believe, played right away. He was kind of a raw developmental prospect. Incognito wasn't great.
Yep.
How many guys so far have been slow developing? You don't see rookie linemen. And again, it's because the position is so nuanced. There's more bodies around you, so there's more variables to sort out. Very rarely do offensive linemen just insert themselves into the NFL and hey, we're rolling now. These guys have a lot to learn, and a lot of these guys are late bloomers because of that.
Yeah, and you're also so reliant on the chemistry you have with the other four guys on the line. And look, that takes time.
Yep, great point. And I think coaching is more important at offensive line than any other position, too.
Yeah, yeah. Andy, we're going to take a 30-second break and come back with the remaining 9 on our offensive lineman countdown. Rich Eisen does 3 hours of radio that becomes a popular podcast in addition to tons of TV for the NFL Network. He was not shy in his opinion of former co-worker Skip Bayless, and he was not shy on the SI Media podcast with Richard Deitch. Rich Eisen, one of the top sportscasters in the business, on the SI Media podcast with Richard Deitch. Find it on iTunes, Stitcher, your podcast app of choice, and at si.com/podcasts.
What did he say? What did Rich Eisen say about Skip Bayless?
I don't know.
Do we have to listen to the podcast? I guess that was the whole point of the teaser. That's a good teaser, though. I want to know what Rich Eisen said about Skip Bayless.
And it's been kind of an open season on Skip Bayless for all these ESPN guys and ex-ESPN guys. But
It's not the worst thing in my mind.
it's kind of not. And I think Skip Bayless is doing all right with his new paycheck. So.
Yeah. Everybody's getting what they want there.
There you go. There you go. Andy, before we jump into the top 9 here, a couple of quick mailbag questions. As always, if you want to reach out to Andy or I, you can email talkback@themmqb.com with podcast in the subject line, preferably, or get us on Twitter, Andy_Benoit or ggrambling_si. Those are separate ones. We don't share a Twitter account. Or Facebook. We're both on Facebook. Learn how to spell our names, and you can find us on there. It's easy enough. First one is actually coming via Facebook. This is Liam Crony.
You do this on every name. You realize that?
I do.
You say the poor guy's name, and then you guess his name in a different way after that. Nobody knows. Just roll with it like you know what you're doing.
If I pronounce it seven different ways, one of them will probably be right.
And you'll have satisfied Leon Kralman and then unsatisfied everybody else.
There you go. Well, I mean, I got called out for it's Daniel from La Jolla, California, not La Jolla, California. Because I pronounce it phonetically, apparently.
One might be bad because there's a Beach Boys song about La Jolla, isn't there?
Is there really? I'm kind of a music guy.
Don't they mention La Jolla and Surfing USA?
Oh, yeah, they do. You're right. See? This is the pressure I live with, Andy.
This was the guy that had to complain about Sheldon Richardson, right?
Yeah, Jets fan, I assume, although I might be making an unfair assumption, asking about last week's top 15 defensive linemen. No Sheldon Richardson, no Leonard Williams, not even a mention of getting votes. I think Sheldon Richardson was in the sort of names that you and I had both jotted down. He did not make either top 15. I believe that is a factual statement that I just made. Leonard Williams, I don't think got consideration from anyone, but we'll start with Richardson
he's
here.
He's not ready, yeah.
Yeah.
And you wondered if this guy's a Jets fan. If I recall in the email, didn't he take a little pot shot at our show at the end of his comments?
I don't think so. Not in the part you sent me.
I think, didn't he say, I'm going to have trouble listening to this show again or something
Oh, no,
like that?
You're thinking of Sam as the next one. And I,
okay, all right. Because I was going to say, if he said that, then he's absolutely a Jets fan. That's how they roll.
I pray that the next guy was joking about that, too, because he's one of my favorites. But yeah, we'll start with Sheldon Richardson here. I wouldn't have argued if he was top 15. I think he's borderline to me. I think all those defensive linemen we talked about last week, they were all A and A-minus players. So, you know, to not make that list is not really a knock.
No. And they moved Richardson around a lot more last year. He played outside linebacker for them down the stretch. He played it pretty effectively, in fact. He also would line up in the A gaps at times. He became a hybrid movable chess piece under Todd Bowles. I would expect they would do that this year. As far as Leonard Williams, that's not a discussion yet. I like him. I hope he does well. But he got benched in their sub packages at the end of the season. So they were taking him off the field after he'd been on the field. And the reason why is they didn't feel he had enough pass rushing juice. So he has some developing still to do. I think he's where you want him to be. I don't think he was a bust by any stretch of the term. He's not top 40 yet.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. And he's not dominant enough in the run game for a guy who doesn't really give you a whole lot in the passing game at this point.
Right. And he could. I mean, he's getting there. He's new. He's learning the NFL still.
Yeah. Yep. The second one came from Sam McCready, at McCready Sam. That is via Twitter. Mike Daniels not in the top 15 defensive linemen. Sadly, that's shaking my faith in this podcast, and I beg Sam to stick around. But Daniels was actually, he's another guy. He was in both of our sort of names jotted down underneath. He was actually the next guy on the list for me. He was 12th in Jeff's list, so he did get a vote. He was 16th for me. He was down around 20 for you. Same type of deal. I like Mike Daniels. He's a really good player. He could be top 15, sure.
I like him. I think he's good early in the down. I think he's really good late in the down, second effort type of guy. And they rely on their D linemen there in Green Bay. Dom Capers does less. He does more with linebackers than defensive linemen. He'd rather put secondary guys and linebackers on the field and trust that he can have one or two dominant defensive linemen to hold the gaps or shoot the gaps, whatever they call for. And that's why Green Bay's always drafting D linemen so high, is because if you're not going to play very many of them, then you're going to need the ones you do play need to be very good.
Yeah.
And Mike Daniels, who is not a high draft pick for him, but has played better than their high draft picks, he's more than worthy of that role.
Yeah. Yep. Well, enough about these defensive linemen. We are talking offensive line this week. Back to our countdown. Number 9, our second highest rated center on this list. This is Ryan Khalil, who I think last year was the best center in football.
I would not disagree with that. Carolina does not have an easy running game to spearhead or passing game because they do so many shifts and motions and different formations, and they have a lot of moving pieces. Well, when you do that, then sometimes a defense, like I know there was a defense last year, the Giants decided they didn't want to deal with all the moving pieces, so they weren't going to react, and they would just play the same static front after every snap and
yep.
and hope that their guys could overcome angle deficiencies at times. And it worked okay for them. But a lot of times the defense, if you're going to move on offense and move your guys around, the defense will move their guys around in response. Somebody has to sort that stuff out, and somebody has to be on top of that for the offense and understand who's blocking who now that everybody's moving. And that guy for Carolina is Ryan Khalil.
Yeah. You and I both had Khalil 8. Irwin didn't rank him. He is not a analytics guy. 12th best center by PFF because of a poor pass blocking score, and Football Outsiders consider Carolina's O-line below average as far as pass protection goes. They had more specific stuff than that. They didn't just say below average because they get more specific. But you can...
Yeah.
You can check
and they are. They're right about that, too. But Carolina uses so many extra bodies in offensive line protection that they can afford to be below average. Because
yeah.
These guys aren't free. You got to pay to be above average. You can't just – and if you're signing Michael Orr as your left tackle for $9 million guaranteed, which is a bargain at left tackle, then you're going to – what you're saying is we can live with below average because our scheme accounts for those guys.
Yep. So Khalil comes in at 9. Andrew Whitworth. A rock at left tackle for the Bengals here. He is number 8. And he was awesome last year. And that was after the Bengals basically took two developmental left tackles in the 2015 mm-hmm. draft, which I don't know if they were expecting Whitworth to fall off. I mean, obviously the guy's going to eventually fall off. He won't be a 68-year-old stud left tackle. But do you see any reason that Whitworth shouldn't be a, you know, first-team All-Pro consideration type of guy for the next, let's say, 2 or 3 years?
Well, the one reason, so a few things. I think the Bengals like Cedric Ogboihe, the guy they took in the first round last season, and he's going to replace Whitworth at left tackle sooner than we would guess. Now, one of the reasons that will be true is because Whitworth, as a guard, is probably even better football player. Yeah. I remember when he filled in at guard a few years ago, especially he went in midway through the San Diego game back in 2014, may have been 2013. And he was just, it was 2013. He was just unbelievable on the move as a run blocker. Just the most dominant performance I saw on film all season was Whitworth just moonlighting a guard. He's a better guard than tackle, so they can move him. They don't have to because Clint Bowling and Kevin Zeitler are pretty good guards already, but they've got these other guys that are going to be ready to play soon. Cedric Ogboihe, Jake Fisher, who I imagine will push Eric Winston at right tackle. And the reason it wasn't a commentary on Whitworth that Cincinnati took those guys. They didn't think Whitworth's going to wash up. The Bengals, keep in mind, they like to draft 2 or 3 years out. They've done that on defense as well. We've talked about that, where they take a cornerback 2 years before they need him. They sit the guy, like almost like they're a college program, and the guy has a red shirt year or something, and then he doesn't play till he's a junior or whatever. But the other thing is the Bengals teach their offensive linemen very different techniques than any other team. They've got a kind of a intellectual, old-school offensive line coach in Paul Alexander. Greg Bedard wrote a very nice piece about him in the magazine last year, in fact. Mm-hmm. And Alexander's pass protection techniques are totally different than there's 31 pass protection techniques in the NFL, and then there's Paul Alexander's pass protection technique. So young rookies are not going to be cut out to play, and you got to teach guys how to play that way. So the Bengals like to take guys a few years and give them some time on the bench to learn it all.
Yep, yep. You had Whitworth 13. I had him 4. Irwin had him 8. So he comes in at 8 on our list. Zach Martin is number 7, edging out Whitworth there with 27 points, 26. Down year for the Cowboys, obviously, because they were running out Kellen Moore at quarterback. That pretty much tells you what went on there. And Matt Castle and Brandon Whedon. Nothing went right there. But Zach Martin, still a stud on what is the best offensive line in football. You know, Martin is a guy. He was a left tackle in college. They kicked him inside the guard, and he just makes sense there. He fits there. Why do you think he works at guard, whereas not every tackle you can just say, okay, well, you're a mediocre tackle, we're going to put you at guard, and you're going to be a star?
That's a good question. I think he's comfortable playing in traffic, playing with bodies on both sides of him.
Mm-hmm.
You can tell he's transitioned to a new position a little bit because – he runs really hot and cold. He looks great at times, like better than anyone at times, And then other times his technique is totally flawed and he stands out negatively. He'll still make the play even when he stands out negatively, but that's in part, and he doesn't always make the play, but when he does, it's in part because Dallas has so many other good linemen around him too.
Yeah.
So he's in a tremendously good circumstance. And when he entered the NFL, he was playing next to a rookie center, or a really young center, I guess it was, in Travis Frederick. But it was a great one. I think Frederick's as good as any center in the league. And he got to play for Bill Callahan his first year. That's a great way to enter the NFL. He took a step back last season, but I think he belongs where he is on this list.
Yeah. Speaking of Travis Frederick, tied for fifth and the top-ranked center on our list, Travis Frederick and Josh Sitton come in with 37 points apiece. So, Frederick, I don't know, what makes him the best in the league?
There's something called the reach and seal block, and it's the key to zone blocking, especially in the middle of the line. So what it is, say you're a center and you've got a nose tackle shaded over your right shoulder, which is a very common alignment in the NFL. And you're the center and your team's running the ball to the right, which means that nose tackle is half a body ahead of you. You've got to get around him. So you got to reach block that guy, which means you got to get outside of that nose tackle, who, again, is starting off all the way over on your right-hand shoulder. So he's two steps ahead of you. You've got to reach block him and then seal him backwards and basically get around him and be quicker than him. Frederick does that better than anyone in the league right now, and it's remarkable because keep in mind he's also snapping the ball when he does it. Josh Sitton's also very good, but Sitton doesn't have to snap the ball. He can fire off the ball. I love watching Travis Frederick on those reach and seal blocks. It's the key to what Dallas does with their O-line. If Frederick were not good at it, then the benefit that the Cowboys get from Tyron Smith would be negated most of the time.
Yeah. And Josh Sitton coming in at five as well. You had him fourth. You had him top five. I had him 10 and Irwin had him 9.
Well, I think Sitton is whenever Green Bay needs to stabilize things, Sitton's the guy they run behind.
Yeah.
Sitton to me is an easy one. He's a good pass blocker. He's what you think of when you think of a good offensive lineman. He's a good, steady pass blocker, and then the guy that they run the ball behind when they need good things to happen.
Well, we got four more to go before we jump into it. 30 seconds. Going to take a quick break. We will be right back. Wimbledon is back, and the traditions of the All England Club will serve as a welcome distraction from other news in the UK. Novak Djokovic's serve is not dropping against the dollar. Serena Williams is planning for Major 22, not Article 50. For SI's tennis coverage and better Brexit jokes, let's hope, than these, hear John Wertheim on Beyond the Baseline, SI's tennis podcast. Find it on si.com/podcast or search Beyond the Baseline on your podcast app of choice. All right, Andy, before we jump into the top four offensive linemen in football, one more mailbag question. This is coming from Robbie Bergeron via Twitter, at Robbie Bergeron. Love the podcast. What doesn't Emmanuel Sanders do to be outside of the top 15 in our wide receiver countdown, which was a couple weeks ago? I actually had Sanders top 13. I love the fact that he is quick, he is fast. I think if you we're in a parallel universe where Emmanuel Sanders got traded for T.Y. Hilton 3 years ago. I think Sanders would be putting up monster numbers. I think he was a little bit limited, one, playing with Demaryius Thomas, who is obviously the number one guy there in Denver, and Peyton Manning's, you know, middling arm strength the last couple of years sort of limit Sanders' value in the deep passing game. But, Andy, you didn't have him on your top 15, so I'll actually let you do the bulk of the answering here.
I wish you didn't, because this is a total cop-out answer on the horizon. I don't think Sanders is top 15, and I can't tell you why he's not top 15. It's not like he's lacking in the certain skills. He doesn't have bad habits. I don't quite go as far as you on the T.Y. Hilton comparison, because I think Hilton has that top notch of speed that you just can't teach. Not that you can teach any kind of speed, but I remember when I did the thing with Chris Harris, he told me T.Y. Hilton's the scariest fast receiver in the league. And Chris Harris, remember, has played against Sanders in practice. So he didn't mention Sanders, but you have to assume that's implied, because guys always will trumpet their teammates first.
Yes.
And he brought up Hilton, Chris Harris has played against Antonio Brown. In fact, he's been destroyed by Antonio Brown before. And he still felt Hilton was the best pure deep guy, just A to B, B being the end zone. So I don't know if I see Sanders as that kind of guy, but he's a good player. And if you told me he's on my offense as my number two, maybe even my number one, depending on what else I've got, I'm comfortable with that. I think I can win games that way.
All right. Fair enough. And I'll see you in that parallel universe where Emmanuel Sanders had been traded for T.Y. Hilton. And we'll see how that worked out. Back to the offensive lineman countdown. We are on the top four. And Andy, this is the one where you and Irwin did not see eye to eye. Trent Williams comes in fourth. He got a second place vote from you, a third place vote from me, and a 15th place vote from Irwin. I think Trent Williams is a stud. I think he's a no-brainer top three lineman. I thought there was a clear separation between the top three and the rest of the group. Is there anything to not like about this guy in your book?
I would say he does have some brain farts every now and then.
Mm-hmm.
There you go. That's what it is. About once every two games, if he's struggling, then maybe three times every two games, Trent Williams is going to do something not stupid, but just he's going to make a bad play, and it's going to hurt you. It's not going to kill you, but it's going to hurt you. So we're talking about a high level of consistency that he doesn't quite achieve. But again, I had him number two. So the talent base is extraordinary. Washington, they have Bill Callahan as their O-line coach now. Washington's a zone running scheme. If you're going to do that zone stuff, we talked about how important it is that your center can reach and seal. The Redskins, by the way, have that in Corey Lichtensteiger. He's good in that regard. The other thing that's important is you have a tackle who's nimble enough to turn the corner so he can reach and seal the defensive end,
mm-hmm.
or he's fast enough to cut off the backside and create a backside running lane. You've got to be able to move, in other words. And Williams moves with the fluidity of a tight end, a big tight end. Yeah. So I like him. He's really good in space, too. He's great in the screen game.
Yeah. I did not get an explanation from Irwin as to, I mean, he had him 15th, so he's on the list.
But, I get it. Normally I would be throwing my hands in the air about Jeff Irwin here, because we had him 2 and 3, you and I, Irwin 15, but I get it. On Trent Williams, I get it.
All right. Coming in third, our top interior lineman on the list, Marshall Yanda, every year, first team all pro, played a little tackle last year.
Survived, and he was fine there. Some of those votes, did he make the All-Pro team last year?
I think he did. I feel like he always does. I feel like I just gloss over his name every year because he is always on there.
Some of that has to do with name recognition. He wasn't as good last year as he was, certainly not 2 years ago, where he was the best interior lineman.
Yeah.
So, I had him top five as well, so we're splitting hairs now. He plays in his own running scheme. He can also win with power. He needs to. My guess is he would tell you he wants to bounce back this season. That'd be my guess.
Who would you have taken above him in interior lineman last year?
Well, in fact, you know what? I'm looking now. The first team, it was DeCastro and it was Yanda. I would have taken Richie Incognito ahead of Yanda.
Okay.
I would have also done Sitton ahead of Yanda too, by the way.
Okay. Yanda was third for you and Irwin. He was fifth for me because I penalized all those non-tackles because I am
just kind of a jerk. Well, Yanda's been good when he's played tackle. He doesn't do anything for you?
He's primarily a interior guy. That's why I had him as my highest-ranked interior guy because he's shown he can do it in tackle. So I'm going to lump these top two guys together. Tyron Smith is our number one. He got first-place votes from you and Irwin. He got a second-place vote from me. Joe Thomas is our number two. He got my first place vote. He got a 2 from Irwin. He got a 5 from you. For me, I ultimately, when Tyron Smith is playing well, he's the best lineman in football. I think that's not debatable. I thought he was a little bit shaky at times last year. I thought he gave up a lot of plays that a top guy shouldn't give up. He got beat by guys who shouldn't be beating him. I went with the reliability of Joe Thomas over the, I don't know, I guess somewhat disappointment of Tyron Smith last year, though I also kind of, like I said with Sue on last week's defensive lineman conversation, I kind of understand why Smith maybe wasn't at his best last year when your team season is falling apart, maybe you lose a little focus, that type of thing. But you draw a little more of a line between the two guys because obviously you had him 4 spots apart here on the countdown. Am I crazy for putting Thomas number one?
No, it's not crazy.
I put Smith number one because I just thought, okay, who would I rather play with? And Tyron Smith. Tyron Smith is a little bit, keep in mind, he's not finished. He's still developing.
Yeah.
And he's a little bit unrefined. He was very unrefined to start his career. Now he's down to a little bit unrefined. And it doesn't, even when his technique is shoddy, it doesn't matter because his feet are so springy and so quick. He covers so much ground. His body control is extraordinary. So he's an unbelievably gifted athlete. And it's on the topic of feet. The other thing with Joe Thomas on that side of it, he's one because his feet are so stable. He keeps his feet very close to the ground when he moves. He doesn't lift his feet high. They call it being a lawnmower. You want to act like your cleat's a lawnmower.
I've never heard that, and that's a great term right there.
Yeah, because the higher you keep your feet, whenever your foot's off the ground, you have no balance. You have no power, of course, because you're up in the air. So the key for offensive linemen is how well can you keep your feet close to the ground. We're talking about pass protection here mainly.
Yes, yep.
Joe Thomas has done that better than anyone in the league. And I remember I spent a whole week with Ryan Silverfield, who was the Vikings O-line coach for a while, was in Detroit last year. He now runs the O-line for Memphis. And he's as good a teacher of offensive line as I've ever encountered. We spent a week watching nothing but offensive linemen, and we got to Joe. We did Joe Thomas at the end after learning what the technique's supposed to be, and it was like we'd been looking through dirty glass all day, and now all of a sudden the window was perfectly clean watching Joe Thomas. It was like, who is this guy? This is flawless. So I like Joe Thomas, and that's why he's able to. That's why I think if he plays into his late 30s or at least mid 30s, which is kind of like late 30s for a left tackle. Yeah. He'll still be effective
because he's
been good. He's not Tyron Smith, where he has to be a better athlete than everybody. He's been good because he's a more skilled football player than everybody.
Well, there you go. Joe Thomas 2, Tyron Smith 1. That is a wrap on our offensive lineman countdown. Thanks, as always, to researcher Jeff Irwin, helps us put this together, and producer and editor Alex Abnos, always making us sound a little bit better. And most of all, thank you to all of you out there who listen. You guys are the best. Keep sending your notes. We love hearing from you. If you haven't already, please subscribe on iTunes, SoundCloud, or Stitcher. If you are over on the iTunes, leave a review. And it would be cool if you made it a nice one, because that's just, you know.
It's the right thing to do. It's the right thing to do.
Exactly. And if you're listening to this before the 4th, be careful with your fireworks this year. I'm not going to make a JPP joke, but I am going to steal a line from The Simpsons. Celebrate the independence of your nation by blowing up a small part of it. That is the MMQB podcast. We'll see you next time.
Tip of the hat to Albert, another strong edition of MMQB. Did you know your favorite team has a daily podcast on the Locked On Podcast Network? Steelers fans, we have you covered with Locked On Steelers. Cowboys fans, it's Locked On Cowboys. And Chiefs fans, it's Locked On Chiefs. You get the picture. Search Locked On, your favorite team. Search on Apple Podcasts or Google Podcasts for Locked On, your favorite team. Or tell your smart speaker to play podcasts Locked On, your favorite team. Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.